Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. You're about to hear someone TV should make room for. A popular comedian and performance artist whose latest shot at tube status, web series Radical Cram School, won raves at the recent Asian American International Film Festival's first ever pilot showcase here in New York. Get ready to hear Christina Wong when she joins me next. In this era of plentiful television, what might separate the series that get on from those that will not? It could all rest on one thing, the pitch. Unscripted TV producer and executive Brant Pindinnick makes the case next half hour, and stand by to win a copy of The 3-Minute Rule, his upcoming book, in our classic trivia segment. And also ahead, Renee Zeeb and Zellweger expands her TV horizons. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker, and presented on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get three free books when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. A very happy Monday afternoon to you and all, and welcome once again to the program All About Television. First of three episodes this week and wrap up August, month one of our 13th year on the air. 71 beautiful degrees here at the top of the hour in New York. Got some wonderful guests coming right over the next hour, and we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. Pick up the phone, use this number, and dial in. The number is 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number's good anywhere you're packed across the country or around the world here on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. Another way you can be involved, our chat room. We already have somebody already in the room. It's SimonApple04 by name, and you can find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the program is on the air, you can communicate with others and bring others into conversation by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen. Follow the instructions, other people will be live with you. Christina Wong is live with us from L.A. after these news notes. After waiting in the TV arena through the controversial Netflix series What/If, Renee Zellweger has made a deeper commitment to the medium. The Oscar-winning actress will develop new scripted series for MGM Television under a 2-year first-look agreement set up this morning. Zellweger will direct and or star in some of what her outlet, the Big Picture Company, makes for MGM. In partnership with Carmela Caslini, that's the producer of the new acclaimed feature, The Peanut Butter Falcon. In another first-look effort, drunk history creator Derek Waters will set up additional projects at Comedy Central while keeping his popular series going for a 7th season next year. Hulu will go forward with Woke, a comedy mixing live action with animation. New Girl co-star LaMari Morris will star in the series, inspired by the life and output of K-Chronicles cartoonist Keith Knight. Now some quickies. Amazon will present a New York Fashion Week special headline by Rihanna September 20th. USA Network confirmed Briar Patch, the new Sam Esmail created drama starring Rosario Dawson, will debut early 2020. With Strahan and Sarah marks its first anniversary on ABC's Daytime Line next month, that's Michael Strahan and Sarah Haynes from Good Morning America, there will be a name change to GMA3, Strahan, Sarah, and Kiki. Actress Kiki Palmer will become a full-time host on the program. Mr. Mom, Voodoo's first original scripted series adapted from the popular film, will debut September 12th on Voodoo. That's the video man promoting service presented by Walmart. And the annual MTV Music Awards go on live tonight from the Prudential Center in downtown Newark, New Jersey. Miley Cyrus is expected to debut her new single there. And that is news notes for today. And now joining me live from Los Angeles, the popular comedian, satirist, performance artist, and recently creator of the web series, out to become a TV series, Radical Cram School, Christina Wong. Hi, Christina.
Hello, Simon. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm happy to hear the news notes because it means my friend Keith Knight is working. I didn't know he had a thing going. Good. So this is how I get my news.
That's really wonderful.
Waiting to begin on that.
How do you know Keith?
You know, when I grew up in San Francisco, and I went to a street fair once in high school, and he was signing zines, and I was so starstruck, like $2 for his zines, and they were hilarious, and I remember he autographed it for me, and then I just ran into him when he briefly lived in L.A., and I was like, you know, I held on to your zine forever, and, you know, and it turns out we're sort of similarly, like, we tour colleges, we sort of do versions of one-person shows, so and now I think he moved to North Carolina,
But yeah, I'm just happy to hear he's working. He's got two kids to feed, so, and he's super funny.
And he's a wonderful comic strip called The K Chronicles, and that's what this series is based on. And Hulu is really on a comedy kick. They've had wonderful show. We've had the people behind Pen 15 on the show earlier this year. Shrill, his creator, was on the program. Raimi has done very well, as was considered for Emmy nominations earlier this summer. So they're really on a super super comedy kick.
Yeah, it's awesome.
So you've been trying to break into television for quite a while. I remember, believe it or not, 4 years ago when we were simulcast on not just Blog Talk Radio, but also on Brooklyn Penn Media, now Brick TV, and you can see the evidence on YouTube. We had the executive producer of a pilot you made called, I believe it was called The Wrong Way.
It was, oh, wow, that's crazy. I did not come up with the name of this pilot, and it was not my favorite name, but it was called One Wrong Makes It Right, and it was about 3 years ago. It was right, but we sold it when Obama was president, then had to shoot when Trump took office, and like the whole context for the entire world, especially around the premise of this reality show pilot, completely shifted. And the idea was, I was this character named Christina Wong, who was this like very ambitious activist, but with kind of wacky ideas for how to engage people. Get them off their asses and working towards social justice. But everything shifted after the election. Everyone was taken to the street. You know, like it was just a very different context. And it was a good experience. It made me glad that I had my own body of work. And many points are in the process of imagining what would have happened if it did well or didn't do well. I was like, thank God I'm a performance artist and still have things to do, you know, at the end of the day. But as it is, that was that pilot. I'm surprised you caught wind of that. I kind of like didn't really tell anyone until after we shot it.
Do you get in the course of your work, as you travel around the country, you do one woman shows, some called Wong Street Journal, others under other titles. Do you get any calls from the likes of Netflix or Hulu or Amazon or the broadcast networks or Comedy Central or other cable services about your work and like, hey, we'd like Christina, we'd like you to develop something for us?
I've had a lot of meetings, and then I've been like a guest on I've been a guest on late night shows on Comedy Central and FX, but there's a lot of people running around. We did have a meeting at Disney for Radical Cram School, which is super exciting. And they straight up were like, we love this series. It's too much for us because it's quite radical for them. But, you know, I don't know. I've taken meetings. I'll just leave it at that.
If you can make the meetings happen, Simon, make it happen.
What's going on? What's your question?
Let's see if we can do that. At least we're going to make the suggestion before the conversation is up. But I'm just wondering, when you meet with someone like Disney, do they give you feedback about how the program or the pitch or the idea comes across?
Yeah. I think the fear that people have if it's never pitched before is that that's just a firing squad and they're waiting to get rid of you. But I am surprisingly sound after doing this for a while is they do want you to succeed. They're also trying to figure out, because usually I meet with someone who's not right at the top, and so they're just trying to prime us for how to get ready for those meetings and like what in some situations the people ushering me in or my ideas in are helping like tailor it before they show it to their higher ups. So it doesn't mean it's a very nurturing process, but it's not as scary, I guess, as it had felt before I ever got to pitch.
We're speaking with Christina Wong, and her newest effort to break into television via the web is called Radical Cram School. We're going to talk about that shortly in our next segment. It was one of six pilots and web series that were given a great showcase here in New York at the first ever pilot season of the Asian American International Film Festival. After 40 years of that festival in New York, they finally decided to do something on television. I was there along with Christina and some of her gang and everyone else involved with the pilot. Some of those pilots, by the way, those producers were on our show last month, and we'll talk about how the festival came out, that particular night came out, in a little bit. Christina joins us live from Los Angeles. This has Power On Tomorrow Be Televised. I'm Applebaum with you from that other coast known as New York. We just have 71 degrees at the top of the hour here. Absolutely gorgeous weather. We're in a sea of heat waves. We're in a cold wave, and that's really good. This time of year, pretty late summer, going to the Labor Day weekend. If you have a question or comment for Christina, give us that ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. First of three episodes of our program, All About TV, we're doing this week. Coming up on Wednesday, same time as always, we will have Alex Z. He's the creator and executive producer of the new Hulu series, Wu-Tang, An American Saga, that premieres next week. So tune in. Alex Z from Wu-Tang, An American Saga, coming next week on Hulu. He joins us live as our lead guest, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And coming up on Friday, our lead guest will be the executive producer and writer of the first new series on Hallmark Movies Now. That's a streaming service available from Hallmark on smart TV sets and devices. It's called When Hope Calls, and we'll have its creator, Alfonso Moreno. Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio and Speaker. That's Tomorrow Will Be Televised. 3 episodes for you as we wrap up August here on the program All About Television. Christina, when I saw the pilot of Radical Cram School, here's what I thought.
Yeah.
Great satire on all those 1950s and 1960s shows, either Ding Dong School or Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, but even more so, shows like Howdy Doody, Richard Mahoney Time, The Pinky Lee Show, all those shows that had kids in the peanut gallery. Did you grow up watching any of those shows, and were they inspirations for Radical Cram?
I loved children's programming when I was a kid, obviously, and I don't have children now, so I had to play a little bit of catch up in terms of like learning that rubric. And I think for us it was trying to make something that both kids could watch, but sort of winked at adult audiences, and it was like comedy audiences that would appreciate. So the premise of Radical Cram School is it's me as Auntie Christina teaching a group of young Asian American girls and one non-binary child different ideas around social justice. So that's what that is, and for some adult audiences they appreciate it because it's kind of funny to watch young kids learn really big concepts. But I think it's also kind of surprising how funny these kids are, and they're not scripted. And a lot of the criticism from the right has been that they think that the kids are being forced to say the things they do, which is to scream at pictures of Trump and stuff like that. But really, they're just saying things they think out loud, just saying what they know.
Or as ABC is going to start saying next month, kids say the darndest things. And I'm wondering, how did you find the kids, and how did you pull them all together along with the crew to shoot this?
So this project started when one of our producers, Teddy, who's been a longtime friend, Teddy Chow, he's married to our other producer, Anna Michelle Wang, and she's also a puppeteer and very well-versed in writing music and is actually writing a musical right now. And their oldest daughter, Liberty, who's in our series, I guess had been saying to him, I wish I was not Chinese. And they live in Ohio. And he reached out to me and said, we're going to be in L.A. during Christmas break. Do you want to, can you sit down with Liberty and her friends and talk to her? And I was like, we should make a web series. So it was really, it was sort of that deadline of them going to be in L.A. for such a short amount of time that forced us to kind of get off our butts and put this together. And so I asked Facebook, my friends on Facebook, to throw some money in. We all volunteered our time. We ended up paying a little out of pocket, and then it was Liberty's friends, and then I did a little bit of hunting around of kids, on Facebook. So it was all like friends, kids, and Liberty's friends. We put together about 9 kids, and we shot over one day, and we did a lot of group calls to kind of figure out what could a curriculum look like that's both meaningful to these kids, so they're not just like props reacting, but that they have a meaningful day that they leave with, where it's not just like they're not the butt of the joke.
What were the subjects that you covered, and did the kids get the joke so fast that they came up with these? That is one of the things that charms about this show, is they come up with these great one-liners or these great interplays between each other.
A lot of that is, yeah, a lot of the humor you see is a lot about editing. There was a lot of things we were trying to throw at them. And the idea of a cram school is the nickname for an Asian American tutoring school center, right? And so this idea is that radical cram school, I'm trying to teach them social justice concepts in the span of one day. And so so some of the things we wanted to get them thinking about are like words that are used in activism. We wanted to have them look at different figures to get a sense of what they kind of understood about the world. And so that's the first episode, the one that caused the most controversy, I would say. It was like I'm showing them. I actually showed them a ton of photos, but we edited out some of their reactions and just kind of kept the most which ones we thought were fun. So I'm showing you pictures of Harvey Weinstein and Trump and Woody Allen and Hello Kitty, and just getting a sense of, like, if these kids know who these people are. And then we have another episode where they just sort of talk about identity. And some of the kids are Asian and another race, and they're talking about what does it mean to be mixed race. And then we end with a music video called The Asian Girl Blues, which was written in collaboration with the kids. And we wrote it in advance, but we had been in communication with the different parents and getting feedback from them, sort of priming them for this idea of writing a musical about being an Asian girl in America.
As a matter of fact, that video or that section of the program, for people who saw, people who didn't see the festival, was definitely the highlight. One of the highlights of the season was
we were very happy with
people really got the jokes, and it's a hysterical piece of work, especially when you see all these Asian girls sort of like vent their frustration. There's a lot of stereotypes that get shown up here, and people really got the jokes.
Yeah, I mean I think that's where people are having a hard time believing that they're not scripted, but kids are really, like, they really do say the darndest things, and they're actually super opinionated. And I've had people say, like, you shouldn't be brainwashing kids or whatever. I'm like, I'm not brainwashing them. I spent one day with them, and we just, you know, recorded them, and I could never invent half the stuff that they said. Like, we had no idea what was going to come out of their mouths, and they are super opinionated. They know when something's not right. They weren't afraid to vocalize it. And I think that's, like, what people need to understand about kids in general. Like, they can be more honest than the rest of us. Like, the rest of us are just kind of conditioned to think, to be polite or think that kids are just blank slates walking around. And they're actually, like, they can be super, they super call it as it is, which these kids did.
The first thing that came into the mind seeing that video was somebody gave Trevor Noah at Comedy Central a call and let him know about this. This is like perfect for a show, or perfect for Late Show with Stephen Colbert, or perfect for the stage show, even the eye opener on CBS This Morning.
I watched a lot of Jimmy Kimmel Talks to Kids and Conan Talks to Kids to kind of figure out how we were going to go about doing these little episodes. And it's interesting because Teddy, who's our producer, he's a professor. So his, like, strategy is much more Teddy and academic. And for me, I'm like, I need to shoot stuff with these kids that edits well, because nobody wants to watch a long-ass process of kids going through their, like, you know, sense of self-development. So we had to figure out this happy medium between, how does kids process stuff but also making it fun to watch, because there's only so much you can sit and watch kids in class all day, you know? So we had to find the parts that were more salacious and interesting to film and edit.
By the way, we have a couple of new people in our chat room. Thanks for coming aboard. Simon Apple04 by name. Find our homepage, blogsofway.com/televised. If you have a question or comment for our guests, put it in the room or give us a call, 646 646- 652-2906. We're speaking with comedian, satirist, performance artist, and person trying to break into television and shows, Christina Wong. Join us live from Los Angeles this half hour. On tomorrow, we'll be televised. Simon Albarn will be live from New York. If you have a question or comment or remaining moments with Christina, make the ring happen, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We have a brand new classic trivia question coming your way in our second half hour, and we'll do it while we have a conversation with somebody who is now getting into the art of the pitch and how it can make a difference if you want to create a television series and get it on the air. The book is called The 3-Minute Rule, and our guest in our next half hour is Brent Pendivic. He is a unscripted TV executive and producer. Some of the shows he's gotten on the air are The Biggest Loser, which is coming back on USA Network, by the way, next year, and Bar Rescue, a very popular show on the Paramount Network, formerly Spike TV. So stay tuned on the next half hour. You can win a copy of his book, and you got to be in it to win it. So stay tuned. Our next winner, our second winner of year 13, could be you. Christine, what were your thoughts about seeing your work and the other work that we showcased that night at the Asian American International Film Festival?
Oh, so we were up for Episodics Award. We're so exciting, but we couldn't have been programmed in a more contrasting program. Like, basically, three kids came with us to watch, and they could not watch the first 40 minutes of the whole series because it was so adult. Like, one was about someone finding a vagina. One was about an Asian dominatrix. It's beautifully shot, but, like, cannot have the kids watch that. Another was good vibes, like friends hanging out over pot. So that was pretty funny because I was like, I don't think they had realized that we might want to bring the kids to come watch this when they programmed us. But, you know, I think it was interesting to watch it, and it was all women filmmakers, which I thought was really cool. And it was cool for me to see how an audience can show up to all those different things and still respond to our series that was all kids. So I think that's pretty cool. And I also think it's cool that film festivals are trying to figure out how to address the fact that so much content is being made on the web and completely tend to skip the whole film festival route. So I appreciate that this is something they were trying out. And
it was fun for us to watch it on the big screen. Yeah, it was all women. It was all women in lead roles, which was great. In most cases, many of the pilots had all women crews, or mostly women crews. And by the way, Christina's not kidding. Yes, the first some of those we had the producers on our show, and yes, one deals with a whole vagina thing. One that we didn't have, but it was very mesmerizing, was one about an Asian dominatrix, who, by the way, was created by a former dominatrix. And I understand that she did win episodic.
They won, and we were like, we're so happy for them, but we're also like, we have no, like, could it be, in what other universe but this festival would we have ever been up against a dominatrix web series? Like, I don't know how we could have beat them short of breaking the law. Like, it's just, it's so apples and oranges, the fact that we were in the same series together. But you know what was cool is it made me excited about season two. We have so much great feedback, and also a lot of very negative feedback, but that negative feedback came from the right, which helped fuel a lot of the donations for season two. And so we've shot up this bang up season two, which is like 20 times more spectacular than season one. Like, we have locations and budget and better costume and art design and a real makeup artist. And just the scope of ambition of what we cover in the second season is super exciting. So I'm excited to see where that takes us. And I do feel like when you're like, are people banging on your door? I feel like this is the season where people will come banging on our door, because it's just like six little television pilots that we shot in a very short amount of time. And just really like groundbreaking stuff for kids. And I'm not even like patting my own back. I'm just like really wowed by what we have made and excited about it. And if all that stuff that I hope happens doesn't happen, well, I think it's going to be a lot of fun in festivals. So what it is.
When will season two run and where? And given the fact that you said Facebook put some money in, what about trying Facebook Watch, which is available to make plays on smart TV sets and smart devices?
I'm not sure.
we were supposed to try to get it out in August. So the rush to shoot it was our director, Janessa Jaffe, was about seven, eight months pregnant when we were shooting. So we were trying to shoot it before she gave birth. And now her beautiful baby's born, came out early, and so we've been doing a lot of group calls and going through edits while she's, you know, being a mom for the first time. So we're going to take a couple more months on it at least, but we've turned a corner on a bunch of the episodes. We just need to get some graphics and stuff on it. But, you know, for all of us, we're all volunteering our time to get it done. And life is happening. Life and death is happening all around us as we're making this stuff. So we want to get it done soon before the kids get too old to enjoy it, to enjoy watching themselves. But yeah, so that's the answer. I don't have an exact date, but I think we're close-ish. It's not going to be like a 3-year situation. Some of these series that I've seen that take like forever.
And before we go, one more time, I want to congratulate all the pilots that were showcased at the Asian American National Film Festival. I really hope this becomes an annual thing, and it looks like it will. And incidentally, all six I could see easily getting on various networks. There was one pilot that was the final one called Pineapple, whose creators we had on our show. I think that show could definitely be a Disney Plus program, could be a Freeform show. Every single one of them could go, including yours, could go somewhere. You could see them go on Netflix or Hulu or Amazon or CSL Access or some, or it's not a broadcast or cable network. They could go somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, I just worked a little on a show called, a rap battle. It was about people rapping gifts. And I was like, this can get made, honestly. Although, you know, the world is wide open. The appetite is large. So, yeah, I feel good. I feel good about the future. And I feel very lucky that I've been able to sustain myself as long as an artist and that things like Kickstarter or Seed and Spark and these kind of crowdfunding things exist that help people fund their dream projects.
One other thing before we go, Christina, what do you think about the fact that now we are seeing a flowering of Asian American talent show up both in front of and behind the camera? Not just shows like Fresh Off the Boat, but for example, Angela Kang being the executive producer of The Walking Dead, one of those popular shows on cable, The Terror Infamy, what AMC is doing with that series, what they did with In the Badlands with Daniel Wu, and what some other networks are doing in terms of putting on shows put together by Asian Americans or hiring Asian Americans episodic directors or producers, not to mention also some folks like John Chu, who did Crazy Rich Asians, getting contracts now to develop programs for television.
Yeah, it's an exciting time. I need it to trickle more towards me. It has a little, so I just need to do that more, and then I'll be doing somersaults for you next time you interview me. But yeah, it's I think the audience is splitting, but they are finding that, you know, people are watching. So it's all good. And I hope it also lends itself towards more progressive Asian American voices and the kind of stuff that I like to make.
And if you want to stay in touch with what Christina is up to all over the place, with her performance artistry, her comedy, everything else, here's where you go online, ChristinaWong.com. That's ChristinaWong.com. And if you get a chance to see a performance in a place near you, go for it. She's marvelous. I've had a chance to see her. We first met about 4 or 5 years ago when she did an event that was from Horowitz Associates, one of the best research firms covering the world of diversity on television. And she was marvelous in her stand-up routine there. And so if you're in, go for a treat. And Christina, keep us posted, of course, when the second season of Radical Cramps premieres. Christina, great to have you on the program. All the very best to you and your crew. And thanks for finally coming aboard.
Oh, absolutely. It's good to connect with you. Thank you, Simon.
You're welcome, Christina. And let's keep the fingers crossed that sooner or later you get on the tube and on the tube to stay.
Sooner than you think. All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Take care. Christina Wong joining us live from Los Angeles. More than Robert Tova is coming with Shirley First of Words from the Fine Folks at Audible.com. If you want to know what the military can be like, well, there's a brand new audiobook that gets into that. It's by a man named Matt Best. He's a former service person, and the book is called Thank You for My Service. It's unlike any book about the military you have ever read or heard. And you can hear it as part of a trial subscription to Audible.com. All it takes, Audible.com or audibletrial.com/televised. You know, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and inspiration. Over 100,000 titles to choose from. You listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing this on right now at Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, IR Radio. And don't forget, among that catalog is a growing number of Audible Originals. It's original audio productions. It's the best of Broadway or Broadway regional theater and one-man, one-woman shows. And don't forget, if you sign up at audibletrial.com/televised for right now, you can get not just one free audiobook for a month to hear, but three of them for a month to hear, two of them being Audible Originals. So check out audibletrial.com/televised now and hear for yourself how audible.com can transform the way you hear the world. When we come back, is the environment with plentiful TV making the pitch better for people who want to break into television? We'll speak to an unscripted TV executive who's been very successful at the pitch, and he has a brand new book about it coming up called The 3-Minute Rule. Brent, join us live from L.A. after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You're listening to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com and www.spreaker.com. Together, reach over 35 million listeners around the world every month and growing. BTR Spreaker, home for The Hope Collection. Great family-friendly radio tomorrow, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. The Hope Collection, right here on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. And don't forget, that's the BTR coming your way 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow We Televised. Simon Applebaum here with you live from New Web, New York. Great guests coming your way in the half hour ahead, along with our classic trivia question of the week. And we invite you to be part of the program. So if you just tuned in, you got the chance to be interactive with us. So give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We have some people who just came in the room. So get involved either in the room, that's SimonApple04 by name, at our homepage, blog.radio.com/televised, or give us that call. Either way, we will get you involved. In this age of plentiful television, where you have Netflix and Hulu and Amazon and upcoming services like Apple TV+, BET+, HBO Max, etc., is it going to be easier for people who want to break into television with their own series? Well, my next guest has some thoughts about that, and there's a book coming out that might make that process easier. It comes out in October called The 3-Minute Rule, Say Less to Get More from Any Pitch or Presentation. He is the head of his own production company, and among the shows he has brought to life, The Biggest Loser coming back on USA Network next year, and Bar Rescue, one of the big hits on Paramount Network, formerly Spike TV. Joining us live from Los Angeles, an interview exclusive, Brent Pizidic. Brent, welcome in.
Hey, Simon. Thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it.
Same here. So, Brent, with all of these new services coming up, do you think it's going to be easier or tougher for people to break into television, whether they want to do a scripted or unscripted series?
You know, listen, there's opportunities for sure because of the thirst for content. But cutting through the noise and getting your sort of message heard is going to be a little tougher because it's just a busy, busy marketplace and everybody is out with every single thing and every idea they've had. So it's a little tough to cut through, but there's going to be good opportunities for sure.
In your book, you make two points. Point number one, the pitch is a big deal. How you promote what you want to create could make all or the entire difference in the world. And the second thing is, and it might be surprising, is you don't have to take that much time doing it. How did you come up with both ideas?
Well, listen, you know, I've been pitching TV shows for a very, very long time, and what I learned really early is that the audience in that network development meeting is a very sophisticated audience, and they've heard, you know, most versions of most pitches. They have a very specific buying need and what they're looking for, and you're really not there to entertain them or sort of chat around them. They kind of just want to get to the real good. What's the idea? How does it work? Is it going to be successful? How do I make it happen? And it's like those stages, and I remember I was literally wedged between Simon Cowell and Mark Burnett was in the meeting after me, and Simon Cowell walked out of CBS, and I was like, there's no way they're going to want me coming in there yapping my head off about what's been going on in my world or making some big sort of, you know, lead into this pitch to get through there. I was like, I needed to just get them the idea, why it works, how it works, and do it quickly. And I found that once I developed that skill, I was actually getting a better return on the investment I had made in those pitches. I was effectively saying less in these meetings and getting a lot more results. And so I started to apply that across all pitches and everything I developed, and most of my life turned in like that.
How long did you thought about writing a book like this?
You know, listen, it takes a while just because it's like it's hard to get all those thoughts into the succinct process. And I make the joke all the time when I'm on stage. It's like it's taken me 20 years to learn how to say something in 3 minutes because it's really difficult because as someone and, you know, anybody listening is going to understand, when you are passionate and you've developed an idea or you've developed something that you really know well, it's hard to condense not everything you want to say, but it's what you need to say. And those are two different things, and they're really hard to pick through and find those what the most important thing is to your audience and not what the most important thing is to you. And it's really hard to do. So it takes about a year to go through that process.
Well, a lot of the people have just joined us in the last few minutes into our chat room. If you have a question or comment for our guest, put it in the room or give us a call, 646-652-2906. What was it like for you? This is your first effort at authoring a book. And it's a pretty fair-sized book, I might add.
Thank you.
How long did it take for you to write this?
You know, it didn't take me as long once I felt the confidence and the flow. I think the first two chapters to get it to the actual publisher, because with Random House, you know, they're a pretty big publisher, that gave me a lot of nerves and sort of anxiety about that because, you know, they're dealing with big authors that do this for a living, and I'm, you know, this was my first book. So it took me a lot to get over those kind of fears, and it really reminded me of when I was doing, you know, rough cuts of pilots to send to the network for the first time. It's like you're swamped with this self-doubt that is this going to be any good? So I think that process alone took me probably 4 or 5 months just to get the first two chapters where I thought they were good enough to go out. But once I started getting chapters back from them with, you know, with nothing, you know, no major notes, I realized, oh, okay, like I know this material so well, I can make this happen. And then they are obviously a very good partner that helps, you know, get it right down into the core message. So it overall, 8-9 months.
Before we break down that core message, get into a little bit about dealing with a pitch for a scripted show versus an unscripted show. Are there similar approaches to both, or you really have to change strategy depending on the type of show you're doing?
There's a little bit of strategy in the asset itself and what you're pitching. There's a lot of difference, but the style and the form and the way you go about it should be almost identical, which is I want to tell you the most valuable information quickly, concisely, and clearly as quickly as possible so that you as the audience can engage from an informed perspective. Now, in scripted, of course, it's more about the intellectual property and what the writer is bringing to the table, and so there's some historical elements of that, so you've got to be really clear about that. And the biggest mistake I see in the scripted space when I hear pitches or I make, you know, or I guide people on pitches is they want to talk about the idea of the show. They want to talk about how it works and the characters, and that's fine. But in scripted, it still is based on intellectual property. Who's the writer? Where do they come from? Where are you getting this information? What's the underlying rights? Like, those are the core elements. You got to get those things clear and defined and valuable first. Then everything else falls into place. And in unscripted, it's basically the total opposite. It's what's the idea, what makes it unique, how will you do it, you know, where does it come from, and those are the core elements, and then who's going to do it and how you're going to make it, all those kind of things come later, but the what is it is the core element of that, and in my system I sort of walk people through how to do that.
If your project in scripted, a series, a made-for-TV movie, a limited series, is adapting a well-known piece of literature or literature from an up-and-coming writer that you believe in, how much does the name of that writer or that writer's output or prolific work, how much does that figure into the pitch?
It's a sliding scale depending on how good and how big they are. If they are a big writer with big credits that's done lots of stuff, it's 100% of the pitch. You walk in with Sean Ryan's next show, you are going to sell it 100%. So you don't really have to do a lot in the pitch. And vice versa, if you have someone who's never written anything before who you really believe in, that is going to take a Herculean effort to make that and get that to happen. So depending on how the level of proficiency that writer has demonstrated in the TV or movie world is how much you have to pitch. And I use a lot of that sort of examples when I talk about any pitch for any idea is your level of confidence and the level that you bring in value dictates effectively how many words you need to sell it. The more you're talking, the more you're doing, the more you're selling, the less confident and the less valuable your information. Even you believe that. The more confident you are, the less you actually have to say.
It sounds like if you have, let's say, you're adapting a novelist like, you know, Philip Roth or Stephen King or John Grisham, or if you have a producer like Shonda Rhimes or Ryan Murphy or Greg Berlanti behind you, that can sell things pretty much by itself.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And it's just the value. But the idea is that, and that's pretty obvious, right? If you were walking into a room with that sort of talent, you would sort of lead with that because it's so obvious. What I try to teach people is that you don't need to have that level of talent to follow that same pitch guideline. The most valuable element of the pitch is what you want to get out first, is what you want your audience to understand. It's all about context, right? And an audience, your pitch, your network executive, they cannot understand the concept, the context in its full value until they understand the concept and what you're pitching. And if you're going in there to pitch Shonda Rhimes' next series, that is the concept. That is what it is. And that's what you want to basically lead with, and that's your strongest element, and then everything else fills in. And so if it's a book and it has, you know, massive potential, then that's what you lead in. And what a lot of people do is, like they say in the writing world, they bury the lead, and they try to lead in and build up to their big reveal. And like today, with a hypersensitive audience and the shortening of the attention span, it's like that just doesn't work anymore.
Our guest this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised, he's unscripted TV executive and producer Brant Pendivik, and he's the author of the upcoming book, The 3-Minute Rule, Say Less to Get More from Any Pitch or Presentation. And our next segment, we're going to give you some of the specific tidbits that you might learn from, especially if you want to do your own television series or know someone who does. Brant joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Avon with you live from New York. Glad to have you aboard here on Blog Talk Radio Speaker or the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. If you have questions or comments for our guests, make the call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. First of three episodes we're doing this week to wrap up August. Second one is on Wednesday at this very hour, and our lead guest will be the creator and executive producer of the new Hulu series, Wu-Tang, An American Saga, premieres next week on Hulu, Alex C. That's Alex C. from Wu-Tang, An American Saga from Hulu, joining us on Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. So let's go over these bullet points that are very critical to how your book goes. Here's the first one. Simple is the new sexy.
Yes. I speak that a lot. It's a difficult skill to master, but people desperately appreciate it when you simplify your message for them and the confidence that comes with that, and you'll find that people are wildly attracted to that. This is the way I described it. They're wildly attracted to somebody who can simplify the idea.
Would you say that's the toughest habit to break or the toughest technique to learn?
I think it's the distinguishing between what you want to say and what you need to say. And I mean, the truth is I struggled with this even in my own book. I'm you know, a so-called expert in this thing, and the intro to the book, I start off with saying the average intro to a business book is 14 pages long, yet the average reader decides that they're going to read a book in the first 4 pages. So my intro is going to be 4 pages, which takes about 3 minutes, ironically. And if you haven't bought into reading the rest of the book, nothing else matters. So my first pass at writing that intro was 11 pages long. And it was because I had just written the entire book, and all the information seemed so valuable to me and so good, and it was so clever and so well-written, I felt like I needed to get it all in the intro. And even after I cut it down to like 6.5 pages, I was negotiating with myself, saying, well, maybe this information and this book and this intro is the one that needs to be longer than 3 minutes. And I knew, of course, that was not true because I've been doing it for so long. So I had to literally go back to the very beginning, break out the bullet points of how I take down an idea, put it into statements of value, put it through my WAC method, and redo my entire opening intro to the book. I even posted a picture in the book of my office as them breaking down the book, because even for somebody who does this for a living, it's still hard to know, you know, only what's needed to be said and that which valuable information you need to, like, save for later.
Here's point number two. Never tell your audience something they already know. And along with that, another point you make is do not dumb down.
Yeah. Yeah, because, again, like, you're dealing with what I call the hypersensitive audience. They have unlimited information at their fingertips. They research absolutely everything. They are not going to believe any claim you make. That is just a natural skepticism that our consumer-based information system has created. So you just got to accept that. And so if you're trying to pitch and sell and develop and put ideas in their head that they kind of already know and deal with, it makes you seem amateurish, and it's all borderline disrespectful. And I use this, if you're going to pitch a TV show and you start talking about sponsorship opportunities or the way brands are going to integrate, it's like, are you going to tell the head of Fox how they're going to market their show? Like, that's an asinine thing to go into, and yet so many producers will go and do that kind of pitch where they're basically telling the buyer, you know, parts of their job and parts of elements that they do for a living, how it's going to fit into the show, where it's like, that's not helping you at all. It's hurting you big time.
Josh Harris Inc. is in our chat room. Thanks, Josh, for coming aboard. And he's got this question. Why is 3 minutes the sweet spot for the rule? Why not two?
Well,
why not four? Not 2:30 or 3:50 or what?
It's a great question. And it's actually, there's a lot of science behind it. Because when you look at the way people make decisions, they go through a three-step process. First, they conceptualize, then they contextualize, and then they actualize. So first they understand what it is, then they understand how it works for them, and then they decide how they can act further or get further engagement. And if you can lead your audience with information and lead it to them in pieces that fill those processes in orders, you can actually extend their decision-making process to about a maximum of 3 minutes. So if you do it right, it's not just about condensing your information to 3 minutes, it's trying to extend that decision-making process to that 3 minutes. And the way I've structured the book is it's how to build your information so you get the most time with your audience, so they hear the most valuable elements of your pitch and presentation. So when they start to make a decision, they've got all the elements. And like I said, anybody in your audience is going to know this. When someone's pitched them or want them to do something, sometimes they make the decision yes or no in the first 30 seconds, in the first 20 seconds. There's people, you'll make that decision sometimes in the first 10 seconds whether you're going to, you know, agree or say yes or no to somebody. So the idea is, how do you extend that decision-making process? And that, there's a lot of science behind what's called approach motivation on how that works for people.
Josh, thanks very much for the question in the chat. I really appreciate it. All right, another thing. Don't open with the hook. And some people in the TV industry might beg to differ with you about that. They're thinking, like, you should talk about the hook up front. You say no. Why?
Because no one will believe. It's just, there's a natural skepticism, right? And so I used the example when I pitched Bar Rescue. And if I would have come into the meeting and pitched John Taffer as the next Gordon Ramsay, and as big and bad and amazing as a TV personality as Gordon Ramsay, like, I could have started with the hook of that show. That's really what it is. But from the minute I say that till the minute I – all the way through, your audience is going to be doubting you. They're going to be like, yeah, probably not. I don't think so. You know, let's see that for – and that's not the most powerful element to do a pitch. So what you do is in the system is you lay out the information. I lay out how it works, how the show works. And then as I build up how that show works and what John does and the way he does it and how he does it, the audience themselves is already starting to form the hook in their mind. It's a far more powerful system when your audience – when that network buyer is saying to themselves at about 3 minutes in, they're like, wow, this guy could be the next Gordon Ramsay. And that really is the most powerful version of a pitch, is when you can lead your audience with information. You can get them to focus long enough so that they start to form that conclusion and what I call the hook on their own with you, so you're not having to state it.
All right, we're going to take a quick break from our conversation because we want to do our classic trivia question of the week. Usually we do it as a separate segment, but because we have Brand aboard and because we're offering his book as our prize, the 3 minute rule, that's why we want to have him at least listen to our question. So get your pen and paper down. If you're first with the correct answer, you will win Brand's book, the 3-minute rule. Say less to get more from any picture presentations published by the Penguin folks at Random House. Remember Quinn Martin? Quinn Martin of the 1950s, 60s, 70s was the most successful independent television producer around. He was like the first Aaron Spelling, the first Ryan Murphy in terms of the number of shows he got on the air. He put together such shows as The Untouchables, The Fugitive, The FBI, Cannon, Barnaby Jones, and so forth. In fact, he still may have the record for having at least one of his series on year after year for the most years ever, 21, from 1959 to 1980. And here's our question. The Untouchables was Quinn Martin's first television series. What was his last? The Untouchables was Quinn Martin's first television series. What was his last? If you know the answer, email me, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. It's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and your email address or your mailing address so that if you win, we can get the prize to you ASAP. So let me give you the question one more time. The Untouchables was Quinn Martin's first TV series. What was Quinn Martin's last as executive producer? Email me if you know the answer, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. It's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Again, don't forget to include your name and your mailing address. If you missed the question a moment ago, we'll post it tomorrow morning on Facebook and on Twitter at UBCSimonTWBT. That's my handle, at UBCSimonTWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to be in. And if you do win, you will get Brett's book, The 3-Minute Rule. Say less to get more from any picture presentation. It will come out in bookstores this October. Brent, your day job, in part, is you're the chief of your own company in television called Envelope Entertainment. Do you have any TV projects that are coming from that place?
Yeah, I got lots of little TV projects out there. I got a couple movie projects. I got a movie coming out in the end of September about kidney donation, which is a really exciting project that I did. I've got a bunch of stuff in development, so it's been a fun ride. Been a good ride. I love the business, so it's in my blood.
Borough Vibe 3, by the way, has just joined our chat room, so thanks for coming aboard. If you have a question or comment, put it in the room and give us a call in our remaining minutes, 646-652-2906, or use that chat room and we will hear you. Are you talking about made-for-TV movies, and if so, for what network?
That's going to be a theatrical release in a documentary, so I got a bunch of festival stuff coming up, and I'll do a little short-run theatrical on it, so it'll be fun. I like the creative process in the film world and the documentary. I did two pretty successful documentaries so far, and I really enjoyed that process. It gives you a little bit, you know, I've been doing TV for so long, and it's always sort of like in a formula, so it's nice to sort of get out of the box and do some sort of creative stuff.
Yeah. And what about television? Do you want to keep doing unscripted? Do you want to get into scripted at some point, whether series or miniseries or a movie?
You know, I just did a big series, scripted series for Nat Geo called The Valley of the Boom, which is on the history of the Silicon Valley, and it was a really exciting experience being in scripted. But it's a difficult project for someone like me who's been at sort of the top line of the shows and really driven them. It's a different sort of in the back seat a little bit because the writer is such a powerful entity in those process. So I sort of crafted and created the idea. I sold. I did all the research. I got all the pieces together. I actually, you know, really just, you know, drove to get Matt Carnahan on that show. He's a fantastic writer who I've admired for years. But from that moment on, it became sort of like, you know, cross your fingers and hope that Matt does what he does in magic. And so even when I'm watching it on the screen, I'm like, I had nothing to do with that scene. That scene is absolutely brilliant, and that all came from Matt Carnahan. So that's a little bit difficult for a guy who likes to be sort of front and center on that kind of stuff. So I'll still do some of that, but I really do love doing my own thing as well.
That was a terrific miniseries, by the way. And Matthew, we had on the show, and you did House of Lies for Showtime, a series with Don Cheadle.
Well, like I said, everything you loved about that series, I probably had nothing to do with. So he was an absolute genius. I found the main character. He's a real person, David Kinstanley. But other than that, Matt Carnahan just, I mean, he made magic on that show.
Mm-hmm. By the way, Borough by 3, our latest chat room person, says hello. So thank you for coming into the room. We really appreciate it. Before we leave you, what do you think about the growing number of television festivals that are around the country where more and more of them are showcasing TV pilots, not only for the public to see, like the Asian American National Film Festival, we talked about in the first half hour with Christina Wong, but also for network executives to see and perhaps enter either promo development deals or take the pilot and say, hey, we love what you're doing, let's make it a series. What do you think about this film festival, TV festival movement that's showcasing pilots more and more?
Listen, I think it's a good idea. It's still, it's tough, though, because the film festival and all the festival movements is a business, first and foremost. So when they come up with a new initiative like that, it's really great and you can take advantage of it. But at some point, and soon, the sort of festival business will take over that side of it, and then you'll get a bunch of people who are less experienced putting a ton of their own money to try to get pilots made because they think that's where networks are going to see them, and it's going to be a small percentage that actually works that way. And I think it'll sort of like be the winning awards at film festivals. You enter it enough, you're going to win awards. Same thing with there. If you make a pilot, you'll find someone to display it. Does that translate into sales? Are you able to recoup that investment? Little bit tougher to predict right now, but anything that gets content in front of buyers is a great tool for now.
The name of the book is The 3-Minute Rule. Say less to get more from any pitch or presentation. It's published by the Penguin side of Random House. And if you want to learn more about the book before it comes out in October, here's where you go online. PenguinRandomHouse.com. It's PenguinRandomHouse.com. I've read the book. It's really terrific. We're delighted to offer it as our latest Classic Trivia Question Prize. If you missed the question we posted a moment ago, take a look at it tomorrow on Facebook or on Twitter. My Twitter handle is UBCSimonTWBT. That's UBCSimonTWBT. Remember, in order to win, you've got to be in, so do so, and the best of luck. And it's a terrific book when it comes out. And for all of those folks who are looking at getting involved in this brave new world of clinical TV, smart TV, interactive TV, it's definitely worth the read. Brad, thank you so much for coming aboard. All the best with your continued work in television, scripted and unscripted. And it's been a pleasure to have you on this afternoon.
Simon, you are the man. I appreciate it, bud.
You're very, very welcome. Take care. All the greatest. Brad Grindinick of The 3-Minute Rule, joining us live from Los Angeles. Don't forget, we're back with you Wednesday, less than 48 hours from now, and our lead guest will be from the new Hulu series, Wu-Tang, an American Sabbath, creator and executive producer, Alex C. And on Friday, one of our guests will be the executive producer and writer of the first Hallmark Movies Now scripted series, When Hope Calls, Alfonso Moreno. If you came in late on today's program, you want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. It's blogtalkradio.com/televised. Don't forget, check us out on podcast at iTunes, Apple TV, the Spreaker Podcast app, and, of course, the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. If you go to the latter, put Tomorrow Be Televised in the search bar, click it, and you are in. We love hearing from you. What do you think about today's program with Christina and Brandt? What's your thoughts on where TV is at and where it's going? And if you want to get a new TV series off the ground, what do you think about the pitch idea that you heard in our last half hour? Love to hear from you. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. I do respond to all emails in 24 hours. You can also use that to get involved in our Classic Trivia Question of the Week. And we also have a feature of Show to Know. Is there a TV series you like that deserves more attention? Let us know by email. If we highlight it, you get the credit. simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to also follow me on Facebook. Follow me on Twitter at UBCSimonTWBT. However you follow, do communicate, because what you say matters. The views expressed in this program are those of the participants, not those of the Blog Talk Radio Speaker and IO Radio. Our production associates, Candace Williams, Andy Toews, Blog Talk Radio's General Manager, Jay Sonberg, Executive Content Producer, and the co-founders of BTR, our Al Levy and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow We Televise is brought today by Audible.com, an Amazon company. Remember, Audible will transform the way you hear the world. For a 3-book trial lasting 1 month, audibletrial.com/televised. But Tomorrow We Televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a wonderful rest of your Monday. Back with you on Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. You know there, Blog Talk Radio Speaker and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. What are you up to the rest of today? Anyway, make it great. Oh, by the way, I will answer Broadlight 3 as soon as we get off the air. So thank you for the final comment before we go off. Anyway, whatever you're doing today and tomorrow, please make it safe and make it great. Until next time, stay well and stay tuned.